During this talk, I will cover enteric disease surveillance and exclusion policies in New York City. I will look at an analysis of cases excluded from 2013 through 2015 and discuss these findings. Each year in the United States, there are 9.4 million episodes of enteric illnesses, about 56,000 hospitalizations, and approximately 1,300 deaths. New York City's population is 8.5 million people. There are 24,000 restaurants and 15,000 food retail establishments. There is a significant burden of illness due to enteric pathogens each year. This table shows the number of cases confirmed from 2013 through 2015. Campylobacter and Salmonella are the highest burdens in terms of case counts. We receive about 1,600 cases of Campylobacter and around 1,000 Salmonella cases. Shigella cases vary by year, and we receive 100 Shiga toxin-producing E. coli and 50 typhoid, paratyphoid fever cases, which are mostly travel-related. The health code requires laboratories and providers to report certain enteric diseases to the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and providers are required to report if a patient works in or attends a high-risk transmission setting. Examples of high-risk transmitting setting occupations are food handlers, childcare workers and attendees, and healthcare workers. But providers rarely report if their patients work in or attend any of these high-risk settings. The Department of Health has the authority to exclude patients who work in or attend a high-risk transmission setting. In 2015, New York City investigated 3 cases of typhoid fever in the same household. None of the cases traveled outside the U.S., and an asymptomatic home health aide who worked in the home tested positive for Salmonella typhi and was identified as the source of the infections. Shigella outbreaks in daycares have been well documented, and these outbreaks are transmitted person to person or via fomites. Exclusion matters because people will work when they are ill, and they also shed while they are asymptomatic. This is not an exhaustive list of professions that may require exclusion, but from experience we know that food handling can happen in many different professions and settings other than working in a restaurant. For example, in New York City, we have identified home health aides who often prepare food. And for the most part, anyone who handles food in their occupation, we consider them to be a food handler. We exclude children under the age of 5 who attend any kind of communal childcare setting, and we exclude people who work in healthcare settings, whether it's a hospital or a nursing home. For all exclusions, we try and figure out exactly what duties an employee performs, and every patient who may be excluded is assessed on a case-by-case basis. We identify high-risk cases in 2 different ways. Most cases are identified through routine case investigations that are performed by epidemiology staff, which includes interviewing all Salmonella, S-Tech, typhi paratyphoid cases, and a sample of Campylobacter and Shigella cases. In all interviews, questioner asks about occupation and work address, and for children, daycare or preschool attendance. If the patient reports a high-risk setting, a supplemental interview is performed to assess specific duties and antibiotic usage, which may affect follow-up stool testing. As mentioned earlier, healthcare providers will sometimes report high-risk settings if known. However, very few are identified this way. When a patient returns to work or school is dependent on the disease and the high-risk setting. A patient can return to work or school when they are no longer symptomatic. This is for childcare attendees with Campylobacter and Salmonella. When they have 2 negative follow-up stool specimens 24 hours apart, that's for S-Tech and Shigella among daycare and healthcare workers, or food handlers with Campylobacter, Salmonella, S-Tech, and Shigella. Or 2 sets of 2 follow-up stools taken a month apart required for typhoid and paratyphoid fever, regardless of the setting occupation. For diseases such as Salmonella and Campylobacter, infected daycare attendees and healthcare workers can return when no longer symptomatic. A high-risk case is identified, and the case is notified, and the groups involved in the response are notified as well. That can be the facility or the childcare center. Infection control practices are reviewed with the facility, and we also ask if there has been an increase in illness at the facility. The patient returns to school or work when they are no longer symptomatic. For cases that are excluded and require exclusion, the high-risk cases identified, the cases notified, and the groups involved in the response are notified. An exclusion order is prepared, and either Department of Health coordinates the testing or the patient arranges testing using their physician. When we receive documentation of negative stool tests, a clearance order is prepared and the facility is notified that the patient is no longer excluded. For this project, we looked at confirmed cases of Campylobacter, Salmonella, Shigella, STEC infection, and typhoid paratyphoid fever. We looked at New York City residents diagnosed from 2013 to 2015. And we looked at cases who worked as a food handler, healthcare worker, or cases that worked in or attended a childcare setting. We specifically looked at the number of exclusions that were performed and length of that exclusion. Here we are looking at the proportion of cases we interviewed from between 2013 and 2015 by pathogen. As mentioned earlier, we only attempt to interview a sample of Campylobacter and Shigella cases, and we interview the majority of Salmonella, STEC, and typhoid paratyphoid fever cases. We found that overall, 11% of the cases interviewed worked or attended a high-risk transmitting setting. 5% of the interview cases were excluded. Many of the cases that are in the high-risk transmission setting are childcare attendees who were no longer symptomatic at the time of interview and therefore did not need to be excluded. 187 cases were excluded from work or school from 2013 to 2015. Childcare attendees and workers represented the majority of cases with 101 and excluded, followed by food handlers who had 55 cases excluded, and then healthcare workers with 31 cases. Here we are looking at the median days a patient is excluded from work or childcare. The median overall number of days is 16, and the range was from 2 to 196 days. Overall, performing exclusion takes a considerable amount of work and resources. Epidemiologists have to call and coordinate picking up the specimens and sending them to the public health lab and notify facilities that patients can't work. It also places a burden on the patients and their families because in New York City, a 2014 law was passed requiring employees to provide sick leave with a maximum accumulation of 40 hours, roughly 5 days. But based on the median of 16 days that our cases are excluded in New York City, the sick leave law would not cover that time period. And also when children are excluded, parents have to figure out who is going to take care of their child. Another issue that comes up is that different jurisdictions have different thresholds for allowing people to return to work. For example, some jurisdictions require follow-up stools while other places don't. This can be within city, state, or across state lines. Also, with the increased use of culture-independent diagnosing tests, deciding what criteria to use to exclude cases and to allow people to return to work. I would like to thank my colleagues for their assistance in this project. And if there are any questions, I can be emailed at this address. Thank you.